Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Today, we've got Hollywood actress, put your hands together for Charlotte.
They say never meet your idol, and I met a couple of my idols, the great Al Pacino. And when I was 18, and someone said to me, Charlotte, if you really want to be an actress, go to the US.
You were going to Hollywood at a young age.
I got some acting jobs. Actually, I booked Scary Movie 5. I did Ocean's 8 and Sandra Bullock, who was amazing. That's what happened to me in Duchess, where I co-wrote this script and the studio said, it's great, but we'd want to do it for a bigger budget and we'd want Charlize Theron to play the lead. I said, great, never going to happen. Just want to go to the US, I'll get it out of my system, I need to get this acting buzz, and then I'll come back to the UK. I've done it.
Get a proper job.
Did The Reckoning, my first film that I produced and co-wrote. I won 13 awards for that movie. You know, I've come across some really bad people as well, very powerful bad people. They picked on the wrong girl. There's these Bond rumours going around, right, that I might be the next Bond girl.
Jane Bond.
I think a lot of people knew what was going on and covered for him because he was a powerful producer with lots of money and influence. Imagine if it like Scarface, but a woman.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
So welcome to the latest episode of the Criminal Connection podcast. I'm Terry Stone, aka the Podfather. And today we've got Hollywood actress Charlotte Kirk in the building. Put your hands together for Charlotte.
Thank you.
So Charlotte, we met... I think it's probably about a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
Through our mutual friend, Kirsty. Yeah. And obviously, you know, you've been a big supporter of what we've done, and I've obviously seen a lot of your work. You know, I just really wanted to get you on the show and talk a little bit about your career.
Talk about my career, yes.
Yeah, because when you grew up, did you know that you wanted to be an actress?
There wasn't a defining moment where, you know, I watched something or I saw something on stage and was like, that's it, I want to be an actress. It was just kind of a it's always kind of, it sounds very cliche, been in me, right? I've always wanted, right. I've always performed.
You're a performer.
Performer, exactly. I've always been a right. monkey business, a performer. Right. And yeah, and then in drama, I went to drama school.
So would you say, like, from a child, really, you knew you wanted to be up on stage or
yes.
sing, was it
yes.
singing, dance and acting, or was it just acting. Performing?
Acting mainly, yes.
Right.
And when I was in secondary school, I convinced my mum and dad to put me in weekend drama.
Where were you in England?
So born and raised in Bexley Heath.
Right, okay.
And then I went to the local performing arts school, Jigsaw.
Right.
And then at weekends. And yeah. then I went to the Miskin Theatre after, so I left school at 17, then went to the Miskin right. Theatre, did dance, drama and singing there. And when I was 18, 19, someone said to me, Charlotte, if you really want to go, you know, be an actress, do it for real, go to the US. I was like, really? Really?
You were going to Hollywood at a young age.
Oh, yes. Very wow. young, on my own, didn't know anyone. You know, I didn't go to RADA. I didn't come from a very certain posh family. You know, there's still quite right, a class right. system here. And I was yeah. like, do you know what? Fuck it. I feel like the US, it's very different. I think right. you know, the opportunities are vast, you know, and they still
Absolutely.
Are. Back then they were, and they still are today. So I was like, yeah, I think if I don't do it now, I'm going to regret it. So right.
So how old was you when you went to Hollywood?
Well, I went to New York first.
Right.
19. And
I mean, that is so ballsy just to like go, fuck it, I'm going to New York to be an actress.
I know.
I mean, you know, were you lucky in that your parents could support you, or did you literally just go there with nothing and then you had to sort of make it?
I did some work here in the UK when I was in drama school, I got some commercials, did some right. modeling as well.
Right.
So I had a little bit of some savings.
Right.
But it wasn't going to last long.
Yeah.
So went to New York, got my visa. But right. I got an O-1 modelling visa, right?
Right, okay.
So that doesn't allow me to act.
Right.
But I got some acting jobs. Actually, I booked Scary Movie 5. I was
wow.
like, yeah, fuck yeah. I couldn't do it. Because it was an O-1 modelling visa. It's like, you can be in it, but you can't speak. You can be in it as a model.
I mean, Scary Movie... I actually remember those movies, right? And, you know, they were really good fun. And,
yeah.
You know, and I suppose really, 19 to have an opportunity like that, I mean, that was great.
No, I was lucky. I was
but
very
annoying
lucky.
At the same time, like you said, because you know, if you get an acting role, you want to act. You don't want to just walk around looking pretty.
Oh,
you wanna,
no, absolutely not. But you know, I was so young back then, and I still had so much to learn as an actor. You know, right. I still had so much to learn. My first role, oh my god, it was in New York. Just to get my SAG, my union, to get a good right. O-1 acting visa, I had to do some.
So you're a member
anything.
Of SAG.
Yes.
You were allowed to do this interview today.
Technically, I don't know. Actually,
well,
no, I'm not promoting
you
a movie.
Might be on strike, but we can still talk.
Exactly. And I'm not promoting anything. So, yes.
Right.
yeah, so my first, I had a couple of smaller roles here right. and there. Lucky enough to meet some amazing people along the way.
Right.
They say never meet your idol. And I met a couple of my idols, such as right. the great Al Pacino.
Wow. What was he like?
Absolutely amazing. He's such a nice person. You know, he's just a good person. You know, when you meet like a massive A-lister, you think, oh my God, they're going to be, you know.
Do you know when he speaks? Does he speak? When he speaks, does he speak like that? He goes up like this and he goes like that. Then he goes back down like this.
Do you know what? No, you know, he has that intensity, you know.
Was it hard to talk to him though? Because I always find, like, you know, if I grew up watching Al Pacino or Marlon Brando or De Niro, whoever, and I've got 3 or 4 movies that I love, I'm in.
I know.
Right? And this happened to me with Sean Connery. I was in the Bahamas with a mate of mine, and she went, oh, Sean's a dear friend, he's coming over. And I was like, wow. She said, don't worry, I'll sit him next to you, right? So I'm sat at this table, Sean's sat here, he's got to have been 84, 85, wow. tall, good looking, charismatic, in great shape. I'm chatting away to him, and all he wanted to talk about was golf and red wine. And I'm really trying to sort of go, you know, yeah, Sean, you know, great about the golf. You know, yeah, you know, that Barolo's amazing. You know, the Montrachet and this and that and that. You know, all the whites and all the reds, all the different wines. And, you know, what was your favourite role you played? And then he's like,
I did a bit of acting, you know. I was in a few movies, good movies. But, and then he starts talking about Red Wine again. And I was thinking, I just, you know, when you're sitting with someone like that, it's so cool, and you wanted to talk to him about, you know, James Bond, you were the best Bond, this, that, and the other, blah, blah, blah. But he literally was probably one of the nicest, most charismatic, and I'm sure, I don't know if he was like with Val, whether he liked talking about his career or...
Loved it. Right. But some actors don't. So Brando's one of my favourite actors of all times. Brando didn't like acting as much. So to him, it was just a job, and he didn't think he was that into it. He had other, you know, he wanted to change the world and do all these amazing things.
But you know Marlon Brando in The Godfather? He was the inspiration for me doing this show as the Podfather.
I see some resemblance.
But I need to do is...
Where's your cat?
I need to put a little bit of weight on. I need to get a cat and I need to put the moustache on. And that's it. And put some tissues in my mouth.
Definitely put some tissues. You heard about the audition for that, right?
Brilliant. And he just literally boot polish, boom, you know, tissues. And but I remember reading the book about that movie and about... Brando, and the studio didn't want Brando in that movie.
They didn't want him in, and the insurance said it was just too much. So was it Francis Ford Coppola auditioned him, and he didn't even know he was being auditioned? He came to his house with a camera recorder, Marlon Brando came down the stairs, and it was like Sunday morning, and he came down in his PJs, and he was like, hey, yeah, I've read the script, I like it. I'm just, one second, went upstairs, came back downstairs again, and he came back with all the stuff in his mouth, and he came back, and he just... transformed into the Godfather.
And
it was just...
And that film, I mean, that really did show Francis Ford Coppola's genius, that he knew who he wanted for each role. He knew Brando was going to smash it as the Godfather, and he knew Al Pacino was going to smash it, right? But the studio didn't want either of those characters.
No, they didn't.
And it's funny that just shows what a visionary...
Absolutely.
Coppola was.
Also, the first few dailies of the film... The studio was worried about Pacino's performance. I don't think he'd quite transformed into the Godfather at that point, because it was the first few days where he was the son and he hadn't quite become the Don yet.
So I watched. I think I saw Scarface, and then I saw some other films, and then I think I discovered the Godfather like much later. And when I watched it, it made me laugh, because when you looked at Pacino, the reason he was so perfect in that role. As Michael Corleone, was because he just looked innocent.
Exactly.
He looked young, he looked naive, do you know what I mean? And then he just switches into this, like, actually, I've killed a few people in the army, now I'm going to start killing people on the street. Actually, I can do this, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And when you watch that, you completely believe it. And
he transformed, didn't he?
And that was the genius of Al Pacino. Yeah. But what was he like when you spoke to him? Was he into red wine as well?
Yes, but not to the extent of Connery, actually. No, he loves his craft. He loves to talk about actors.
Right.
He loves to talk about acting. He loves to talk with other actors.
Right.
You know, he's a real, real
Did he
thespian.
Give you any tips? Don't look in the camera.
No.
Learn your lines.
No, I did. I couldn't. I was just kind of... I wanted to get to know him as a person, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it was just incredible. But I told him that I was playing Nicole Brown Simpson, O.J. Simpson's wife. And he's like, really? Wow. And he's fascinated by things. He's fascinated by everything. And I think that's what makes you a great actor, you know? Like, when you're curious, what makes you a curious person about life and other people. And he was just curious and interested about you. So it's really cool.
So who else did you meet that was cool?
Who else have I met? De Niro.
Right.
Okay, met De Niro at the film festival, Tribeca Film Festival. I was like, you're English.
Yeah, Bobby.
Yeah, it's proper, got that cool swagger all the time. De Niro, who else?
What was De Niro like? Because I know somebody who knows Pacino and De Niro, and they said Pacino is, like you said, exactly how you said it.
Absolutely.
But De Niro's a little bit more reserved, and he's a little bit more private.
Yes.
He's, you know, he's quite sort of... You know,
yeah.
I don't know what word you'd use, but he's
yeah, he's reserved. He's reserved. Yeah. He's definitely more reserved and
serious.
Serious. I didn't meet. I only spoke with him briefly.
Right.
I never, unfortunately, met Brando.
That's a shame.
That's a shame.
What about Jack Nicholson?
No, Robert Evans.
Robert Evans. Right. Okay. Was this all in New York?
Mix. LA and New York.
Okay. So from New York. When did you actually then go, right, I'm going to go
I was in New York for about 6 months.
Right.
And I realised that a lot of the auditions, a lot of the jobs, all of that were in LA.
Right.
So then I just said, okay, pack my bags again.
Right.
Let's go to the West Coast.
And what was that like compared to New York?
I like New York. I think I prefer New York. Right. I love the energy. I love that it's very similar to the UK. You know, it's a city. You can walk everywhere. It's that energy about it. LA is very different. Beautiful, you know, beautiful weather, amazing lifestyle, right? You go hiking and the beach and it's all that kind of stuff. Beautiful, but just a different vibe.
The first time I went, that sounds weird, but I was disappointed because I went there and a friend of mine said, look, you know, I've got these contacts in California. You know, we want to have a couple of meetings, see what we can collaborate on. And stayed at the Peninsula in Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
And, you know, I loved the hotel. But then when I walked around Beverly Hills and I walked around Hollywood, I was a bit like, it's not what you think. You know, you think it's going to be this, like, magical, amazing place, but it is literally a bit like a concrete jungle.
Absolutely.
And you go into these studios and they're so massive, like, you know, acres and acres of land. And you're just like, wow, you know, I'm in Hollywood and I don't know what it's like to actually work there because I've never actually worked there, but being there as a sort of visitor and meeting people and talking about collaborating on different things, I always thought that, you know, if I had something to do in Hollywood, I'd enjoy it, but I can, it's weird. You know, like when you go places and you go, I could actually live here. I think I could stay there.
But
I don't know if I want to move there for life, you know.
I'd
enjoy that.
As you said, Beverly Hills is nice. And Santa Monica's beautiful, the beach. But then when you go to Hollywood, everyone wants to go to Hollywood and see the stars and the Walk of Fame. It's awful. It's proper rough. Loads of homeless people.
Even Beverly Hills. When I was in Beverly Hills, there was people like wandering around with shopping trolleys.
Yeah.
There was like crack addicts or wandering about talking to themselves. Yeah. And I was a bit like, and you know, when you walk around Mayfair or you walk around anywhere that's potentially like Beverly Hills, you always think there's going to be a class to it and it's going to be, you know, nice.
Yeah.
But even all, and obviously there's earthquakes there, so, you know, obviously.
Oh, I was in a few of those in LA.
Well, I mean, I was lucky. Oh. I didn't experience that, but was that crazy?
Yeah, it's like 6 a.m. and I thought literally someone was throwing my bed in the air and it was literally, and I thought, oh my God, I'm getting attacked, what's happening? And yeah, it was an earthquake.
So who represented you when you was in LA? Did you have an agent? And a manager?
I had a manager, yeah. Right. I had a couple of managers over, yeah, like 10 year period I was there. 10 years.
Wow.
I only moved back a couple of years ago.
Right, okay.
It was kind of like after COVID, I was there during COVID and I thought, you know, I don't really need to be here. And my family's here, my friend's here. And I kind of done the Hollywood thing.
Right.
I was over it. And I thought, I've built up my contacts and I know what I'm doing. I know how the film business works, the mechanism.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back to Europe and I'm going to open my own production company and make my own movies.
Right.
And that's what I've been doing.
I mean, we are.
And here we are.
So when you actually landed in Hollywood.
Yes.
You know, what, you know, tell us some stories. You know, what happened? Did you get a job fairly quickly or did you audition or... You know, what was your process when you was there? Did you get a job while you was waiting for, you know, work to come in or?
It's like a blur. So much had happened. It was kind of like being on this treadmill and on this running machine and just constantly, I was just always on it. I'd like have my little routine. I'd wake up, I'd go to the gym, I'd sit down on my laptop and like when I first got there and send mail out to all the agents and the managers and open call castings and all that kind of stuff. And I was trying to, just thinking my first leading role I'd got was a Polish film with Stephen Baldwin, actually. It's a comedy called No Panic with a Hint of Hysteria. And yeah, I was there for a good few years until I kind of got that break.
Right.
You know, I was doing the grind and auditioning and meeting filmmakers. And yeah, it's tough. Right. I mean, the beauty about it is like, it's nice, but it's kind of annoying as well that everyone out there is in the film business and it's like everyone's, you can relate to everyone and and you never know who you're talking to. But at the same time, it's like, oh God, you know, it's La La Land, isn't it? Bring me some normality.
Right.
So yeah, I'd done that film, which was great. And then, you know, I did some other films as well. I did, you know, Ocean's 8 and right. Sandra Bullock, who was amazing.
So that was Ocean's 8, was that your first sort of gangster film? Did you do one before that?
I'd say the film that's coming out, Duchess, is like the first proper gangster film.
So that's where you release your inner gangster bitch.
Absolutely. My inner Don. Or Donna, would you call
Donette,
it?
Donette. But Ocean's 8, I mean, that was a great movie. And that was, Rihanna was in that. Did you?
Yeah,
did
yeah,
you
yeah.
have any?
I didn't work with Rihanna. No, Sandra Bullock, though. She was awesome. And of course, I worked with Bruce Willis as well, who's absolutely incredible as well. Rockstar.
Did you say yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker?
Do you know what? I didn't.
Do you know something? It's awesome. It's stupid shit, but... That's the sort of thing I'd do. And I met a friend of mine once, and this guy's a practical joker. And he was at some, I don't know if it was the Oscars or the BAFTAs, he was at like some really highbrow awards ceremony and he saw George Clooney. Yeah. And he went up to him and he went, George, he said, I'm a massive fan of your work. He goes, you are a legend. And George was like, oh, thank you so much. He said, what was your favourite piece of work? And he said, the Nespresso advert.
Are you serious? Oh, my God. I would have loved to have seen his face.
And he said he just sat there, like, looking at me. And he said, you could see him on his face. He was like, you can't. But he wasn't verbally saying that, but he was looking at him like that. And it just made me laugh.
You know, it probably dented his ego a bit.
But I think most people would have found it funny. But he didn't Brilliant. Look amused at the time. But
imagine.
Only my friend could do
oh,
that.
Oh, Frankie Valli is another one that I've met.
I met Frankie as well. He's a good guy.
Lovely
He's
guy. Good guy. Lovely guy. Sylvester Stallone. Arnold.
Do you know something? I'm a massive fan. I mean, I grew up in the 80s watching Stallone and Schwarzenegger. You know, they were my two sort of... action stars like Statham is now and The Rock, you know, but they were, you know, the staple sort of lads.
Yeah, absolutely.
But who was your favourite out of the two?
Arnold was very, very friendly, like nice, personable.
Right,
I'd say.
Because I watched his documentary.
Amazing.
And he comes across like he's got a great sense of humour.
He is, the way he is in real life is exactly as the way he is in interviews and stuff.
Right.
Really nice, proper personable, just a nice guy.
Right.
Humble.
Yeah.
And Stallone, he's really lovely as well. I mean, it's just legends, you know, just legends. Just kind of like, what I admire is, you know, Stallone, of course, just like wanting to break in, breaking down that door, saying, do you know what? Fuck it, I'm going to do it myself. I'm going to make my own movie. I'm going to make Rocky. And he did it. You know?
Do you know what?
He sold his dog.
The greatest,
and then he bought the dog back.
The greatest story for me about Rocky was he wrote the script and...
They didn't want him to play the role. No, and he said, nope, I'm playing it. I'm fucking playing the role.
And,
brilliant.
And I think, and the figures may be wrong, but it got to the point where he was absolutely on his ass, no money.
Yep.
And they were offering him like $1 million for the script. And he's like, but I'm playing Rocky. And they're like, no. And he was turning it down. And it just goes to show that if you never give up and you just keep on and on and on. And you know, he won an Oscar for that.
I know.
Right? And you know, that showed you how much belief he had, not just in his talent, but also, you know, in his writing ability. And, you know, I remember watching Stallone, you know, and seeing all the different roles he's played. And just like all actors, you know, sometimes you do a part in a movie and the movie don't turn out great. But I'd say the majority of stuff, probably 90% of the stuff he's either been in or directed has been first class. And it's
Amazing.
Been massive. And, you know, I mean,
I can relate to that. I mean, that's what happened to me in Duchess, where I co-wrote this script.
Yep.
And I sent it out to a few producers in Hollywood and I sent it out to one of the studios. And the studio said, it's great, but this is, we'd want to do it for a bigger budget and we'd want Charlize Theron to play the lead. I said, great, never going to happen. Thank you. You've got to have that integrity. Yeah. You've got to go, no, I'm creating these roles and this opportunity for myself and because I know I'm the only person that can play that role.
Absolutely. And the thing is with studios is they always go, yeah, it's like painted by numbers. If you put him and her in it, then it costs this, but then we get that. But
it doesn't necessarily work out.
No, that is true. That is true. But that is, I think... You know, in the old days, a lot of the movies were underwritten by talent because they knew that if they had...
Yeah.
It's like when there was a phase, I think it was in the 80s or the 90s, where if you had Jean-Claude Van Damme or Steven Seagal in your movie, even if it was in one scene or two scenes, everyone would buy it.
Yeah.
Even if it's just for DVD. Yep. So you knew that even if the film was shit, you could make some money. So there was a period of time when people were just doing those movies. And here, similar, but it was on, you know, with, you know, they pick a couple of actors that people knew and then they bring in an American that people knew and then it looked good on the DVD box. But
they clocked onto that because you would bring in, like, you know, Bruce Willis or whatever for 2 days' work, pay him a lot of money, and then he's in the movie for 5 minutes, and then people weren't having that anymore.
Well, I think
there's a minimum now. I think you've got the star has to be in it for at least like 15 minutes,
right?
For the studio to go, yeah, okay, fine.
And I think, I think also, I mean, with all businesses, the model changes, and you know, I think with the streaming platforms and with the way things are distributed now, obviously, I think it's constantly changing and evolving.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of, it does make things tricky. And then obviously when there's a strike, lots of people go, why are the writers on strike? Why are the actors on strike? And, you know, lots of people will go, well, they're paid loads of money. Well, they are, but what they're obviously complaining about, which is right, is obviously in the old days, if you did a movie and you got 2% or 5% of that movie and it was a SAG movie or it was a Writers Guild of America movie or whatever, you know, you would get money, right?
Exactly.
But obviously now, once they've paid you your fee and it goes out on a streaming platform and 230 million people watch it...
You get nothing.
You get nothing. And that, to me, doesn't work for the creatives, the producers, anyway, it only works for the platforms. And it's not just film and TV, it's music, it's the whole world. And so I think, in a way... Because the model's changed, the only way it can carry on and be sustainable is if they end up putting up the prices. But then if you start putting up, if you're paying £10 a month to watch a streaming platform and they put up to £100 a month, how many people are going to go, okay? Because they're going to look at it and go, well, hang on a minute, I'm paying that for that.
Yep.
Now you want to charge me that? I'm not paying it, right? It's, but then it's like, well, you won't have any content then. So it's kind of like a little bit weird that they, you know, I always felt that, and this happened. I got an Apple iPhone and I used to be a regular buyer of CDs, right? And my son said to me, he said, Dad, he said, why are you buying CDs? And I said, well, you know, I like them. I like touching them. I like putting them in the CD player. And I like putting, you know, what I like. He said, but you know your phone? He said, if you go on Apple Music, you can pay $9.99 a month. You can have 100 CDs a month for $9.99 a month. And I was like, really? So I looked at it. You can have 3 months free trial. I thought, I'll try it. If I don't like it, I'll unsubscribe. Loved it. And then I bought another CD. So, obviously...
But what about those artists? That's the thing.
But that's the problem, right? So, as a consumer, I love it. But being on the other end, you're like looking at it going, well, it's great for the consumer, but it's but obviously the platforms need to earn money and the artist needs to earn money.
But the platforms are making so much money. There has to be a balance...
But I think that's really why the strike is. Obviously, they're worried about AI as well, but
that's scary.
But you know, look, if...
Because if they were to take Terry Stone, you know, when you're long gone...
With wig or
me,
without wig? With wig or without wig?
Oh, that's got to... Oh, both. How about that? Without your permission, though, your permission, and you and AI comes along and you're long gone and... You would never, ever, ever agree to this script. You would never agree to these words you'd be saying.
Right.
But AI does it, and it's not you.
Right.
And Terry Stone's on there in the theatres, and you're saying these things, and you're like, oh, my God. And I didn't agree to that. You would never do that.
But do you know something? A friend of mine 10 years ago said to me, and he was talking about AI, and I thought he was mad, right? Mm. And he said to me, he said, do you know something? He said, I've got this really mad idea. Right, where we create this thing and we can get people's faces and put it on bodies and make it look like them. So they could be in a film, they could be in a porn film, they could be doing something in real life, but then everyone would think it's them. And he's thinking the money you'd make. And I was thinking, hey, it just sounds nuts.
Never going to happen.
It's happening. And I was thinking, and I said to my mate the other day, I said, you were like ahead of your game, mate. You should have done it. Right, but he was having these thoughts 10 years ago, and he said to me, he said, wouldn't this be mad? And I was like, it sounds mad, but I said, if you ask someone for their permission to do it, they're not going to give you it. oh, can I use your image? I'm going to put your face on a porn star and start putting you in porn movies. You'd be like, no fucking way. Oh, actually, I'm going to put you in this video doing this. No, you know, so I get why actors wouldn't want that. But technically,
saying that, they could probably do that anyway on the black market, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
They could do it now.
I mean, look at Pamela Anderson, right? The builders in her house, they had that row or whatever. They went for her stuff, found a private video and sold it to, like, some distribution company that made millions of pounds out of it. She got nothing out of it. And you sort of think, you know, it's the same thing, really.
It is.
Right, it's the same thing.
It's invasion of privacy, really.
But I don't know.
It's like you won't have the right to say or do or act because it's not you. Well, they're using you, but it's, yes.
But you,
it's
but
weird.
They can do now. You could actually go on this thing now and you can talk into it. And then once you've done that, they could then say, can you ring that person and say this stuff? And they can make a call to that person and it sounds like you. Right, and they actually think they're talking to you on the phone, right?
So it's
gone beyond the things of sending a text,
the voice.
Oh, I've lost my wallet. I've lost my thing. Can you send me some money? So people ringing up, going, Charlotte, it's Terry. Listen, I've had a problem. Couldn't send me 20 quid, could you? I'll send you my bank details. You go, oh, all right. I'll get back to you next week. You just go, all right. So that's how good it is now. So obviously, you think of all the scams and all the things where people are getting. Conned and duped into doing things online or putting in fake bank details or whatever, you think how bad it's going to get when people can actually impersonate somebody you know's voice. Or, you know, if somebody wanted to stitch you up and they get your face and put you on a video and then have you doing something and then go, look what Charlotte's doing, and people go,
how will the police know?
Fucking hell, look, it's Charlotte, definitely yeah. Charlotte Kirk. And you're how like, well, know? It ain't me. Well, it fucking looks like you. Do you know what I mean?
And then terrifying.
You. But the only thing that would save you in that scenario is obviously if you've got your phone on you. Your phone can put you where you are. But all this stuff is. I mean, it's
scary.
It is scary, and lots of people that are on that AI spectrum have all said the same thing. They've all said this needs to be stopped now because if it goes too far, you know, we might end up in a Terminator. Where
I was going to say where they're taking over. Where they're taking over. That's another thing. They could just turn on us. But I saw something on Instagram the other day, like this robot being in Asia just sitting there on the tube. Like, they look human. And it's just doing its own thing. And you think, oh, my God, that's the future. That's going to be the future. Oh, and there's a hotel in Japan. Everything is robots. There's no people. The check-in is robots. Everything in the hotel is robots.
I want to go, though, don't you? Just see what it's like.
I'll be terrified, though, because you've definitely been recorded. It's like, no, it's just... Oh, take me back to the old days.
But but
the Nokias,
the Nokias, good old days. but going back to you're in LA.
Yeah.
You've done Ocean's 8. Yep. Would you say Ocean's 8 was the big break for you? Because you're in a big, massive movie, huge franchise. Or was that just one?
You know, it's interesting. I'd never say, oh, that's my break. That was my big break. Or because it feels like it's always a continuous, I'm always on to the next thing.
Yeah.
But did
that open up opportunities for you? Because I thought it would have done.
Yeah, it did. It did. And, you know, a lot of it is, you know, it's the whole thing, right? It's the PR, it's the marketing, it's the next project. You know, you're only as good as your last film as well, right? So you've got to have the next lined up. So, you know, that's why I was like, I wanted to put my destiny in my own hands and go, right, I'm going to make my own stuff.
Right.
You know, and create good roles as well, because as you know, as an actor, there's not great roles out there. You know, you've got to create them yourself.
Well, I think the problem
writing good scripts, good stories, they're hard to come by.
They are, and I think the hardest thing as an actor is, you know, you audition, but then so is 50 other people.
Yeah,
and you know, there's no guarantee you're gonna get a part, even if you're good in the audition or you're the best person for the job. It's
politics
up to who. You know, I mean, I mean, sometimes, you know, I get an audition and I'll do something and then I'll say to my agent, you know, who has this up for this role? And he'd be like, oh, Stephen Graham, Sean Bean. I'm like, well, I'm not going to get this, am I? And he said, it doesn't matter. He said, the fact that you're doing it.
Yeah.
He said, you're still doing it. So you're still in the mix. So he said, even though you ain't going to get it, at least people can.
It's true.
The fact that they're asking you to do it is a good sign.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But when I started off, And I'm sure you was the same. You just wanted to act. You just wanted a part. You didn't care what it was. It was just get me on a TV show or two lines in a film. I just want to work.
Yep.
And then what was funny was as you're going through this process, you do that and then you go, right, I want to do something else now. But it's like you become a victim of your own success, because once you've actually done a lead in a movie or you've been in something that's been a success, and it doesn't matter whether it's been a massive theatrical success or whether it's been a huge success on an Amazon or a Netflix worldwide, once you've done that, then you're at that level. And then if you then pop up in a TV thing doing two lines or a couple of lines in a movie, people go, what's happened to him? What's happened to her?
Absolutely.
So you're in this weird thing where you can't do that.
Pressure.
Can't do that. You've got to stay up here, and then you just got to wait. And sometimes, I mean, there was a great interview with Richard Dreyfuss in, I think it was the Sunday Times. And he, I think he was 64, and he said, I'm an Oscar-winning actor. I've been in all these great movies. I've worked with all these great directors, and I'm skint. And I haven't worked for 10 years. And you think, wow. You know, we all think...
But this is why all these big stars, they're doing their own stuff. Nicole Kidman, she has her own production company. Yeah. All these, you know, Reese Witherspoon, they all have their stuff going on. You know, it's very interesting. So you really hit the nail on the head there. Like, I was like, I just want to be in a movie. I just want to go to the US. I'll get it out of my system. I need to get this acting buzz. And then I'll come back to the UK and I've done it.
Get a proper job.
Get a real job.
Did your mum and dad say that to you?
Yeah. Just go and get a real job. Yeah,
get out of your system. Yeah.
And you know what? Did that first little role. Then I got the taste of it, right?
Right.
Then it was like more and more and more. And then I was like, a few years ago, I was like, if I could just like, wouldn't it be great to get like people to say, well, she's, you know, you want to get notoriety, right? Like, I'm a good actress. Could you imagine? Could I imagine if I won an award, how that would be? Did The Reckoning, my first film that I produced and co-wrote and starred in, I won 13 awards for that movie.
Right.
But each award that come in, it was great. The first one was like, oh my God. And then they kept coming in. I was like, this is cool. But I'd love to.
And it's quite good now, Charlotte, because when you meet people, you go, I'm Charlotte Clark. Charlotte Clark? Charlotte Kirk.
An award.
The award-winning actress.
Doesn't matter. And now I'm like, no. Wouldn't it be great if I could like, being a commercial success. That's what I want. I want to be in a commercial successful movie. Okay. And then I did The Lair, and that was the top 10 on Amazon. And I played this badass British fighter pilot, and it was an action role, and it was so cool. And then I did that. And I was like, yeah, but now I want to do this. And it just never stops. So when you ask me, when do you feel like you made it? It's like, it's always an ongoing process.
Well, if somebody asked me that question, I would say I haven't even started yet.
Exactly.
You know, I don't feel like I've made it. And I think that anybody who says they've made it is lying to themselves.
Absolutely.
because whatever...
It's like someone saying they've learned it all.
Yeah.
You never know it all.
No, you don't.
And you never want to stop learning, otherwise...
What's the point?
What's the point?
You might as well just check out.
Yeah.
Exactly. Check me out, put me in
latest,
the ground.
Bye.
Put me in the oven, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But it is mad because, you know, when I was doing the clubs, I got to the point where it was just like a machine. I'd won all the awards, I've done all the events. It was just
making money,
doing this, doing that. And I just got bored with it. And I just thought, I need to get out of this, do something else. I never even knew that I was going to go into acting. I didn't even knew. It was just literally, I fell into it. And somebody offered me a part in a movie. And that's how I got into it. But
you got the acting buzz from
that. But like you know, it is like having a drug. You know, you do a bit and you go, oh, that was really good. And I think the worst thing, it's like, you know, when people who take drugs talk about having a come down, right? And you come off of a film, that must be what it feels like when you do drugs, because literally when you come off a film set, you're right up here and then literally you're like this and you come down and you're sitting in your house and you're like going,
what's my purpose?
What am I going to do now?
Yeah.
Do you know what? I'll go and develop something else, or I'll go and do an audition. But that's why sold my business. I had a bar and restaurant, and then I, you know, did a few other little bits. But my main thing was that I want to focus on acting. So I went to drama school, I did all that stuff. But then, after a year of being a thespian, I just thought, you know, I'm waiting for the phone to ring, I'm waiting for auditions, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. I need to be more proactive. I need something to do when I'm not working.
Exactly.
Otherwise, you drive yourself mad.
Absolutely.
So I started developing scripts, making movies. And for me, what's good is, and I'd give this advice to any actor, because I meet lots of actors that have come out of drama school or, you know, their mum and dads know me. Yeah. Or and they always say, oh, Terry, you know, what's your advice? And I always say, if you want to act, be an actor. But if you actually want to work in the industry, work in a post-production. Work on set as a runner.
Yeah.
Work as a script supervisor. You know, absolutely. Develop a script. Go to some courses. But keep yourself busy. Because what I found is, like, when you make a movie, you work with 60, 70, 800 people. And they're all going off doing other things.
Exactly.
And they connect with other people. So I've just worked with Terry on this. Oh, right, okay, boom, what's he like? You know, so absolutely. It's a way of networking, but it's also a way of keeping busy. And, you know, when you was in Hollywood, I mean, you was there for 10 years. Mm-hmm. What would you say your experience of Hollywood was? I mean, would you say, because obviously over the past, you know, 10 years, you've had the Me Too stuff, you've had obviously the Weinstein stuff come out, mm-hmm. you've had, you know, people behaving badly, you've had, you know, companies going bust, you've had, you know, gangsters. I mean, you know, it's sort of a bit Wild Westy. But what was your sort of experience in Hollywood? I mean, would you say you sort of went for all of that stuff or?
Hollywood is a very, very dark place. I think the industry attracts incredible, talented, amazing creatives,
right.
but it also attracts really dark, not just bad people.
Right.
And you know, I've come across them all. I've come across the talented, the amazing actor, director, producers, and you know, I've come across some really bad people as well, very powerful bad people.
Right.
And I can't go into it, unfortunately, too much, but you know, just genuinely talking, you know, my experiences with, you know, if that happened to me, and you know, powerful, very powerful men that kind of hurt me,
right.
They picked on the wrong girl because right. I didn't take any shit. I just said, no, you're not going to do this. Absolutely right. Not, you know. But it's hard.
It always seems to be the men that behave badly. Is there any women that behave badly, or is it mainly the men?
Absolutely. And a lot of the women, they cover up for the men as well.
Right.
You know, I get a lot of, you know, oh, God. The other day I got this, I try not to read reviews and all this crap and, you know, right. the media stuff. But there was this one journalist that wrote something about me. There's these Bond rumours going around, right? That I might be the next Bond girl.
Jane Bond.
Kirk Bond.
Oh, Kirk Bond.
Yeah, anyway.
My name's Charlotte. I've got the license to kill.
Yeah, I can't go into that. But okay. She said...
So you're not going to be Jane Bond then? Is that what you're saying?
I'm going to be Mr. Bond. How about that? No. And this, she said something like, oh, well, you know how she got the role with her looks and what she had to do for it. You just think... You really are like a woman tearing down another woman like that. Like, right. Why would you do that? You know, a lot of these powerful female journalists, they're working for the top guys. They're telling them to do this because right. it's coming from a woman. So they it's okay for them to say that and to diss another woman, but it's not.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of, you know, bad women out there as well that like to tear other women down. It's really right. sad.
Do you know what though? I just think it's the environment, you know, that we're all in. I think people, you know, there's a lot of jealousy in film and television. And I remember when I first got into the business, people in TV looked up at film and they were like, oh, I wish I could be in film. And people would be like, you're in TV. Mm-hmm. And obviously then that shifted. And then everyone in film's going, I want to be in TV. And
yeah.
the TV people are going,
absolutely.
But there are crossovers.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the way that television's evolved mm-hmm. and the way that they've gone from making these, they were like sort of cheap, sort of low budget sort of sitcoms into these huge productions, you know, that
massive.
Netflix and Amazon do and, you know, Paramount do. And you just watch them and you go, wow, it's like watching, you know, 8 movies. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or 10 movies.
The quality. Mm-hmm.
And it's, and in a way, you know, as someone who enjoys watching content, you know, I like a lot of the true crime stuff, but you know, I saw when the stuff about Weinstein came out, and it did have an effect on us because we had a movie with the Weinstein Company. And obviously when, you know, I mean, he sold his company to Miramax for, you know, $1 billion. And he was like the number one producer in Hollywood. And you know, when it all come out and people were saying, oh, yeah, we can't believe, you know, this has been gone on and people have let this happen and blah, blah, blah. And then all these women have come out and said what Harvey's done. But, I mean, what was your... did you ever meet Harvey?
No. I met his brother, right. Bob.
What was your personal view on it? I mean, did you sort of look at it and think, you know, what he did was wrong, or do you think that what the girls did was wrong? Or
No. Harvey was awful, all total scum. I mean, what he did, I mean, you know, there's evidence of recordings and him forcing girls into hotel rooms, like, come with me, you've got to do this, you've got to do this. You know, with big stars as well. He just had this compulsion. He couldn't help himself. He was just, no, he was really, really scum. But then, you know, the movement from that was incredible.
Yeah.
The question is, I personally didn't know, but the big question is how many people, women, you know, people that work with him, how many people really knew what was going on? I think a lot of people knew what was going on and covered for him because he was a powerful producer with lots of money and influence.
I mean, the thing is, I mean, somebody said something, and you can sort of see this in life, right? You know, when you see people with money and power, that is attractive, right?
Yes.
And, you know, I think you've got two choices when you have that. You can either use it, put it to good use, you can abuse it. And,
exactly.
You know, I think what people that I spoke to, and I spoke to a lot of people about it, because I was annoyed because the film that he had of Ayers, obviously when the Weinstein Company went bust because of him going to prison and getting all these allegations, obviously all the films... It went into Chapter 11, so nobody could get the film rights. Mm-hmm. And then they sold them off, and there was, you know, money went missing, and nobody knew what was going on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not anybody's fault, right? But that's obviously what happened. And, you know, I spoke to people, and they said, look, there was two sides, really. Side one was he took advantage of these women, and the other side was, well, look, if somebody's hissed you, come up to my bedroom in my hotel, and you go up there, and he opens the door in a dressing gown. If you then go in the room, right, you're sort of putting yourself in a dangerous position. And I sort of said, well, you know, if you want to be in this movie, and he's an Oscar-winning producer, and he's going to make you famous, you know, you, it's like it's wrong what he did, but it's transactional. He's basically saying, if you do this, you can have that. So he's misusing his power.
I think a lot of the time I think he did it and not give the girls the opportunity. I think and also I think I'm assuming that, you know, some of the girls went in that hotel room because he's, you know, he's a celebrity, he's a famous man, coming to my hotel suite, right? It's not like a room, it's not a bedroom, a suite. Right. So we can have a private conversation. And maybe those girls assume that the assistant or whoever will be in there. But I don't think he helped a lot of girls out. No. You know, I think it was, but yeah, I understand what you're saying, though.
No, but I spoke to lots of different people about it.
Yeah, it's
because for me, you know, I've always, as a producer, I've always been respectful of who I work with. As an actor, I've always been respectful. If I'm doing a scene with a woman, you know, I've always been respectful. I've always been like, look, you know, and I think you have to be professional. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you can't.
Yeah, yeah.
Misuse your power, and I think that, you know, he definitely misused his power without any shadow of a doubt. But asking people, you know, that even knew the story, a lot of them said that he would sort of say to people, "Oh, come upstairs. I want to talk to you about this role." And then it'd be like, "Oh, I've got a really stiff neck. Can you give me a massage?" And then obviously, then the robe comes off, and then it's, "Oh, can you do this?" And you know, which is you know, but and the thing is. You know, if I was in that position and a woman or a man had done that to me, I'd have actually gone, okay, if you give me that, I'll do this.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have then gone away for 10 years and then come back and said, oh, well, actually, I'm not happy about that now. I want to basically come out and talk about you. At the time, I would have wanted to talk about it.
Or
I would have just said, look, mate, this ain't me. Right? I ain't doing this. If you want to give me it, great. If not, I'm off. Do you know what I mean?
But
a lot of people said that a lot of the people that he was targeting were vulnerable. You know, they wanted work. They were, you know, frightened of him. So it was sort of, you know, again, he was just sort of abusing his position of power. Yeah. But it's good to hear, obviously, a woman's point of view.
You know, and he was a big guy. Well, you know, he was a big guy and you know, but...
But what I don't understand... But what I don't understand, right?
They were scared of not just, like, can you give me a job, but being blacklisted. But what he blacklisted a lot of people.
But what I don't understand, right, if you look at him mm-hmm. and you look at his wife was, like, verging on being, like, a supermodel, mm-hmm. right? And he had these lovely children, and you sort of think... If that was me, why would you behave like that? That's what I couldn't get my head around, and I was.
Well, I've come across a few of those men in Hollywood, you can't second guess or try and figure out a mind of a fucking crazy psychopath or you know a narcissist, a sadist, because that's what they are. You can't second guess these people. You know, again, they have beautiful wives, or if they just want sex, hire an escort. Like why? Right. But it's an adrenaline rush.
Is that your advice? They should hire escorts.
No, they should all go to prison and get things cut off.
But I think that what come out of it, because with all these things, there's always something positive that comes out of it. And I think
the Me Too movement.
With that Me Too movement, obviously.
But the Me Too movement didn't. It helped, of course. Right. It helped and it created awareness. But what frustrates me is people think, oh, the Me Too movement happened. That's great. That's over with now.
Right.
Everything's good. No, everything's not good. There is still lots of Harvey Weinsteins in Hollywood. Right. There's still lots of powerful people abusing their power and, you know, essentially raping women. So, no, it hasn't been addressed at all.
Because again, I don't work in Hollywood, but people that I know that are out there, they did, you know, when I've spoken to them, they've said, when we do castings now, there's always somebody else in the room. You know, nobody's... You know, in any she's allowed to be in rooms with actors or actors mm-hmm. on her own. Mm-hmm. They're all very careful in that they follow this protocol and they have these intimacy coaches and they do all this stuff.
If they want to, if these powerful men want, want to get a girl's number or this or that, it's very easy for them for that to happen.
But I think, you know, there was none of those safeguards in place before.
Mm-hmm.
I just think, you know, with these things, you know, it's definitely changed for the positive. But like you said, it
still
hasn't eradicated it. It's not eradicated it.
There needs to be laws in place to not protect these perpetrators. That's the problem.
Right,
right now, I'm under an NDA where I can't speak about what these people did to me.
Right.
Now, in the Weinstein case, what was very interesting is the judge said to the Weinstein victims, "We're going to take away your NDA. You're free to speak." Which is great for the Weinstein victims, but that judge has to do that or should have done that for every victim around in America. And then obviously other countries can adopt it. There is a law out there that I'm the test case on. I'm currently the test case on this law that says NDAs regarding sexual harassment is illegal. And if I'm to win that case, the floodgates are going to open. Right. It's going to be huge.
So you're basically spearheading that change.
Yes, you know, you could say that, but there's lots of other amazing, you know, people out there, survivors that are doing the same.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
When you look back, I mean, I know you can't go into the specifics of what happened and who I'm with, but did it sort of dampen your sort of views on the business? Did you sort of think, I don't want to do this anymore?
No, it didn't dampen it. It fueled me in a way.
Right.
Like, no, you can't put me down and just think you can just use and abuse me and kick me to the curb. No, I'm going to.
Right.
The biggest revenge is success.
Right.
So, no, it definitely didn't. It fueled me.
Yeah. Have you got anything else that you want to tell us about Hollywood?
Poof.
Is there any
no,
other things?
No, I mean, I would just say as we're on the So if the gangster channel, I would say, watch out for Duchess. That's right. My gangster movie.
Will come on to that in a minute. But,
okay, cool.
But before we come on to obviously moving to the UK, if somebody said to you now, Charlotte, I'm an actress, I'm thinking of going to LA, what advice would you give them? Bearing in mind what you've been through, what you've experienced, what you've seen, what you know.
I don't think you have to be in LA now as an actor.
You do or you don't?
No, I don't think you do. A lot of people moved out after COVID.
Right.
Self-tapes is like the thing now. Everyone's self-taping. You can be anywhere. you know, as an actor, if you want to be, you know, an actor, I would say make it your number one, right? Don't have a backup plan. Just do it, right? As you said earlier, you know, pick up an iPhone, you know, apply for everything. You know, people can make movies on their iPhone now. Just do it, make it, kick down that door. But you don't have to be in LA.
Right.
You know, be anywhere. Just, you know, don't take no for an answer and just do it.
Right.
You know?
So what was, you said earlier that you're, because of COVID and because, I mean, what was America like when COVID hit? Did it just, everything just shut? I mean,
oh,
was it the same as the UK?
Yeah, I was in LA. It was very, very tough. I mean, there was curfews. There was the riots as well. The Black Lives Matters as well was going on at the same time.
Right.
It was, LA was really, really tough.
Right.
Very, very strict lockdown in LA.
Wow.
And then after that, that's when I was like, do you know what? I don't need to be here anymore.
Right.
A lot of people moved out of LA after COVID.
Right.
A lot of actors and filmmakers just thought, I don't need to be here. I'm just going to go back, you know, live where I want to be.
So what was it like coming back to the UK? Because obviously you've been out in LA, you kind of get conditioned to that life. So you've done your Ocean's 8 movie, you've had all your dramas with these people. COVID's come, you've decided to come back to the UK. What was it like when you sort of, was you like, oh, this is why I left, because it was raining? or did you enjoy it? Because it was like, you know, I think there's something definitely British about Britain that, you know, if you've been away for any length of time, when you come back, even if the weather is shit, you still take a breath of fresh air and go, yeah, welcome back, you know?
Welcome back, yes. It was a bit of both, I think. Obviously, the weather sucks. Yes. And
that's such an American thing to say.
I know, right?
Weather sucks.
I know. I've adapted a few words here and there. Right. Picked up a few words. There's elements of LA I miss, and living in the States, the lifestyle, again, the weather, you know, and being, LA is a great city for many things, but, you know, my friends are here, my family is here, you know, and I'm British, you know, it's like, and I think geographically as well, LA is like in the middle of like the end of the world, right? It's, where do you go? You go to Vegas for the weekend, or where can you go?
Well, Vegas is great.
Yeah, but but in London, you got Italy, France, and all these beautiful places. So
when you got isolated. So 20, was it 21 you come back here?
Yes, yeah.
So 21 you come back to the UK. Mm-hmm. And had you already set up your production company and already started writing then?
Yes, that's the thing. Part of me was like, oh, I'm coming back to the UK. And I was like, no, but I'm coming back with a lot of knowledge, with success, with everything. Right. You know, I'm coming back with something. And it's not like I'm closing the door.
Right.
You know, I still have my green card, still going back and forth. So it wasn't like a, you know, goodbye to the US, I'm never coming back. So that was help. It was gradual. And I'd already opened my own production company and made some films already. So
what's your production company called?
So I have two. I have Scarlet Productions and Love Rules.
Right, there you go. So they're the two production companies that Miss Kirk... Are you CEO or are you...
Absolutely.
Right, lovely. So we've got gal power in those two companies. As a sort of production company owner, CEO, you then developed these projects.
Yes.
The Duchess is the one where you play...
The gangster.
The Donette.
Absolutely.
So tell us a bit about that, because...
Okay, so... Duchess.
Would you say you based your character on people that you've met in the past, or would you say you created it from...
The inspiration was Scarface.
Right, okay.
So I was sitting there one day with my writing partner, and I was like, you know what I'd love to do? Well, I love gangster movies, right? So some of my favourite films are Scarface, Casino, Godfather, Layer Cake, all. And I was like,
you miss Goodfellas.
Fuck, did I not say Goodfellas?
And Godfather 2.
Goodfellas, Godfather 2. I mean, the list can go on and on and on. I mean, there's just, oh.
Do you know something? Lord, it's funny, Friday. Right? When people say, you know, what's your favourite gangster film? I say, I don't have eight favourite gangster
films. No.
There's 10.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
But your ones are the same as mine. And that's why I wanted you on the show, because I think what interests me is how big true crime is at the moment, because
massive.
So many people, like, you know, I was in Annabelle's recently, and I was sat at a table and I was just having a cup of coffee, and this guy walked past and he was super posh, and he must have been like 65, and he had the hanky And he walked past and he went, and he walked past me and he went, you fucking cunt.
Stop it.
And I looked at him and he went, I love your films. And I went, do you know what? I said, do you know what? Really good to meet you. And we had a bit of a laugh. And he said, oh, you know, what got you into the movie? And we had this conversation. It's just so funny because what I always find weird, like, you know, you can be anywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. Like I was in Dubai recently and I was in this Thai restaurant in the Medina. I don't know if you've been to Dubai.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a little boat that takes you to where the taxis are. And I get on this boat with my friend and this guy sat opposite me looking at me and he goes, I fucking love your films. And then you go, oh.
So
he goes, do you live here? I was like, no, I'm just visiting. And he said, oh, I've just moved here, blah, blah. And then we had this conversation and it turns out he's like working for this hedge fund and invest money. But it's like, you never know. And the beautiful thing about film is it connects people.
Yes.
And it brings people together and it means that wherever you are in the world, yeah, you can always bump into someone. I'm sure you've had it later.
Actually, when I was in Dubai, my movie was in theatres and cinemas there.
Which one was that?
The Reckoning, the first one that I produced. And I was there and someone contacted me on Instagram and she was quite famous out there. And she was like, oh, can we meet up? I just saw your film, The Reckoning, and you're here. I just saw you posted, you're here. Please, right, can I meet you? And it was awesome. It's so, so cool.
But it's funny. It's like being in a club, isn't it? You know, and
The club of the world.
And it made me laugh. And I've actually been in the most obscure places and met the most obscure people that I've never met. And I would never have met. Exactly. And it's that thing where
brings you together.
And it always surprises me. It's never the nice films that I've been in.
No.
It's always Once Upon a Time in London, Rise of the Foot Soldier. No. Anything that's violent.
Well, look, it sells. Yeah. So I was sitting there and I was like, you know, all the top gangster films I like. And I was like, when's there been like an epic Scarface? Like when, you know, since the 80s, 90s, like an epic gangster movie. And then I was like, what about a female gangster movie?
Yeah.
Imagine if you'd like Scarface, but a woman. And then it just expanded from there.
So have you got any dialogue saying, hello to my little friend?
No, it doesn't. It opens with, it's a voiceover. I do like a bit of voiceover.
Right.
God, I can't remember it all, but like the voiceover opens with power. Just like cocks, comes in all different shapes and sizes, you name it. Sex, money, politics, class, or just a sheer will to put the other man down and leave him bleeding on the floor. Power is nothing without respect. If they don't respect you, sooner or later, some cunt is going to come along and take that power away from you. Ain't that right?
You know, so you just said my favourite word. And
which one?
Cunt. And do you know what's really funny, right? It used to be such a taboo word. Right.
Yep.
And people, if you said it, people would go.
And it was now, like, it's...
But what's funny is that you know, we've had a couple of actresses come on the show that have played in these movies, and what's always funny is you always expect it to be some like working class girl from Essex or London. It's all right and all this, and they're always really nice. One of them was private educated, and they went, I just love being able to transform as an actress from being who I am to being this horrible cunt, basically. And it's just so funny. And I don't know. It's just
the beauty of acting.
As I said, when that guy walked past me and he went, you fucking cunt. I looked around, I was like, what?
Who the fuck is that?
And then he started laughing. He goes, I love your films. And then I started laughing. And it was just like, you know, but it's funny that people are brought together by this thing. And I think what it has done is it's shown that people have got a sense of humour and people have, if I actually put all the people in a room that watched films that have actually come up to me and talked to me, you look at them all and you go, that's not his type of film. That's not her type of film. And it just shows you that film, especially crime stuff, and the reason why we're doing this podcast is because I wanted to basically bring together people, actresses, actors that play criminals in films, writers that write about crime, people that defend criminals, people that prosecute criminals, police enforcement, you know, just everything that's criminal and you know, real criminals. And what is great is people, you know, it's like a club. Do you know what I mean? It's like a true
the
crime
members club.
Club
of criminals.
Do you think obviously, when The Duchess comes out, What's your sort of, are you going to write The Duchess 2, or are you going to develop some more crime stuff, or do you just want to do a crime movie, play the lead in it, produce it, just so you can say you've done one, or do you want to make some more crime movies?
Oh God, Duchess was the favourite role yet that I've played, and I've played a lot of cool roles, like I said, British fighter pilots, witches, everything, but Duchess was just badass, the most grounded, you know, South East London girl. But it was the most fun I had ever filmed.
So that's your favourite role to date?
Yes, definitely. Wow. Definitely.
I'm excited to see it.
It's a good one. And I'm so proud.
And obviously we've got to make a movie together.
And it's got to be a crime one. It's got to be done.
Sure, there's no point doing it otherwise.
No, honestly, but also as you just said, the commercial value of it. Like people love, I want to make movies that people watch and people like, you know?
So the tough thing now, I think, in movies is, unless you've got big stars, you've got to do something that's clearly defined in the genre. You know, we've tried over the years to do things that are different, things that are critically acclaimed, it's so difficult, you know, to get the traction. And you know, it's sort of like there's people that make horror movies, right? That just make horror movies, like Blumhouse, and they are amazing at that.
Exactly.
If you look at Scorsese, right? Scorsese's an amazing director, but if you was brutally honest and said, right, what's his best stuff? It's all the crime stuff.
Absolutely.
He's the king of crime. Do you know what I mean? 100%. If you look at the movies he's made.
Amazing.
And talking about Stallone earlier.
Yes.
Have you seen Tulsa King?
No, I haven't.
So he has just done this crime series where he's this aging mob boss that gets sent out to this sort of godforsaken place.
Let's check that out.
And it is unbelievable. And it's on Paramount, so you've got to watch it. It's very good.
I'll have to give it a go. Good. I think he's on Rambo 100 now, isn't he? Or Rocky?
Do you know something? He wasn't in the new Rocky film, and I watched it. And
really?
I'll be honest with you, I did actually think it felt weird.
Why was he not?
Do you know what? I don't know. It was more about, obviously, the Creed character, and then, you know, he was, I mean, if he'd have been in it, it would have been like, he doesn't really need to be
in it.
But the thing is, I missed him being in it.
Yeah, of course.
When I saw that Tulsa TV series, you know, everyone's going, oh, you know, he's in his 70s now, why is he playing that part? But I watched it and I thought, you know something, even in his 70s, he's still amazing.
Well, I watched Indiana Jones the other day. Have you seen it, the new one?
Not yet.
Brilliant. And yeah, he's fucking, early 80s, late 70s? He's amazing.
It is mad, though, if you think. Tom Cruise, you know, I don't know how old Tom is, but he's, you know, jumping out of planes, riding bikes over buildings. And you know, whoever's producing that movie, I know he produced it, but whoever's actually producing it for him or with him must be sitting there when he's doing his things going, please God, please don't let him. Because when he'd done that stunt and he actually jumped on the thing, broke his leg, and he got up and carried on running, you can see him going like that.
Can you imagine the insurance?
Something? I take my hat off to him. I've never met him, but again, he's one of those guys that you look at his career and whatever he does, he's just been amazing.
Gold. It's really good. Never met him.
So talking about The Duchess, who directed that?
So Neil Marshall directed it.
Right, okay, from The Descent.
Yes, who's brilliant at action horror. Right. And we got, sitting there one day and I was like, you know, I want to do a female Scarface. And Duchess was born and I'm really happy with who we've got. So we've got Cole Meaney, who of course is in Layer Cake and Gangs of London and all that good stuff. And Philip Winchester. Classic legendary Stephanie Beecham.
Right, she's great.
Yeah, amazing. So we've just got, and she's kind of like the female Don. It's pretty, pretty cool.
So why don't you just give us a little flavor of the story?
Yeah, absolutely. You know? So it's about a South East London girl that falls in love. It kind of, the first half of the movie plays a little bit like True Romance.
Right.
One of my favorite movies. And actually someone said it's if they have to make a comparison to this movie, they would say it's the love child of Tarantino and Guy Ritchie. I'm
like, do you know what? That's not a bad.
It's not a bad. Yeah. So I was very pleased.
You were like,
I'll
take that.
Yeah, absolutely. I was like, yes. So it's about a South East London girl who falls in love with head of a cartel.
Right.
And everything's rosy. His men betray him. Things go down really bad. And she takes revenge. And she ultimately ends up taking over the cartel.
Right.
So it's a lot of blood, a lot of violence, a lot of swearing.
Right.
I love the British element, but it's not based here. It's based in Tenerife, in the Canary Islands.
Wow.
And it's kind of got an African vibe as well because it's about the diamond industry.
Right.
Because, you know, when I was writing the script, I thought, okay, gangsters, crime, let's sell it in Mexico. I thought, but it's been done so many times, cocaine, drugs. What else can we do? Let's do diamonds. Let's do the cartel, drugs, gangsters in South Africa.
Diamonds.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a big industry.
Right.
So, so it's kind of got a touch of the blood diamond about it as well, which is...
Do you know what? I think when you're creating a project, I think you need to try and get into, if there's a bit of blood diamond, if there's a bit of Scarface, there's a bit of Sugar Man, so I don't think you can...
Go wrong.
Yeah, you've got to have
the You've got the ingredients, but the thing is, the whole motto of this, I said to my writing partner at the very get-go, we have to be as outrageous as possible. Now, if this was a studio reading this, and they did, we love it, we want it, we want to buy it off you, but we want to make it 40 million and we want Charlize Theron. And I said, absolutely not. I said, let's go the other way. Let's do it as, let's do the things that the studios wouldn't want.
Right.
Don't make it PC. Tone down the swearing, tone down the violence. No, the whole... Audiences today are so desensitized, you have to throw it in their faces.
Right.
And with quality and, you know, with, you know, quality work and good writing and all this stuff. But I think we've got that. But whereas the motto of this, and when you see it, you understand it's as outrageous as we possibly could have been.
Yeah. But I think, again, you know, with content now, you've got to do something to make it stand out.
Absolutely.
You've got to do something different. And
there's just so much out there. You have to. You absolutely have to. And that's kind of the motto of all my projects.
And I can't remember actually seeing a movie where there's been a female, strong female character that kicks ass and is the you know, sort of gangster Donette.
It's pretty cool, right?
So, it's pretty cool. Yeah.
No, it was my baby. You know, you always have these babies. It's my baby for a long time, and I'm very proud of it.
So
it was a tough shoot. I mean, we shot it during COVID. I got COVID during the shoot. The director got COVID. We nearly had to close down because we had it was a tough shoot. We were challenged every step of the way.
I think the best part of filming in COVID was for us, right? Was I hated the every few days they come in and stuck all that stuff up your nose and down your throat. I mean, that was just awful.
No traffic. That was good.
That was the best thing, right? But what I loved, where we were set up in Southend, and we had two hotels, one for the actors, one for the crew, because that had to be kept separate. And everybody had a band. So the crew had different colour bands for different departments, and the actors all had different bands. So everybody were in their groups. But as the actors, we were in a hotel, and obviously there's no one in the hotel. So literally every night, you know, you're there's 100 of you on a film set.
Oh, wow.
And bear in mind, this happened when the second lockdown happened. And I remember literally leaving my house thinking, I'm glad all this shit's over now. Because, you know, it was that nobody enjoys being locked up in the house and being told they got to wear a mask and they got to do this. And I literally went away, got to the hotel a week before, so we was doing some rehearsals, and I was going to the David Lloyd in Southend. I was training, and I was right into it. And then literally we start filming, and then on like the third or fourth day, we're in another lockdown. I was like, fuck's sake, the gym's shut. But then the only saving grace was obviously we was going back to the hotel, and obviously because we was all in the same bubble, it was like normality. So we're all having a laugh. Nice. We're all hanging out. We're all eating together. We're all having a drink. We're all having a laugh. On a film set, you know, everyone's tested.
Yeah.
So you're it's like you're having your party for 100.
And you're safe.
Literally, I remember, you know, I think it was like the 23rd of November, 2021. No, 2020. It was something like, I can't remember, but whenever it was, I remember getting in my car, thinking, oh, I'm really going to miss this. It's been such a laugh. And I've driven home and I walked in, opened the door and I said, all right, everyone. Everyone just sat like that. And I was like, you all right? And they were like, yeah. I'm like, don't look, you know, you don't look that happy to see me. And they said, well, you know, we've been just sitting in here for fucking a month. The kids had just sat on the computers doing their own work all day.
Oh, God.
You know, my wife was sort of teacher, cleaner, cooking. I mean, you know, I actually felt sorry for her because it was literally all put on her, you know, because I wasn't around and she had to sort of obviously do everything. And then it was like, what should we do tonight, guys? We want to watch something on Netflix, we get a takeaway. And that was lockdown.
It was
like, if we're not cooking, we're having a takeaway and we're watching something on Netflix. I mean, I think that's why Tiger King was so popular.
I fucking love Tiger King. I loved it. Oh my God, that came out right at the good right time, didn't it?
My son's watching it and I said to him, I said, what is this shit you're watching? And he went, Dad, he said, trust me, it's the funniest thing you've ever seen in your life. And I said, he got to the end of it. And I said, is it really that funny? He said, Dad, it's that good, I'll watch it again. So we sat and watched it and I'm sat there like that.
I know.
And then people were ringing me up going, have you seen this thing, Tiger King? And I was going, yeah. And I said, I know why people are watching it. And he said, why? And I said, I think people watch it and they think in their minds, I'm fucked up.
Not that fucked up.
So they watch it to make them feel good, you know?
It's true. What was the other one? Everyone watched Tiger King.
Squid Game was another one, wasn't it?
That was brilliant.
Money Heist. Yeah. I mean, there were so many great. But I think it's that thing. I think lockdown, there was the WhatsApps of that Barry character. There was the WhatsApps of, do you remember that? They had them silly videos where people were dancing and they're doing that. And then girls would be like looking like all frumpy and they go like that and then they're all dulled up.
Yep.
And then guys would be doing it and they'd be doing it. And they'd all go around. And it was just, there was just bits of...
People got creative.
Yeah.
I wrote a script. I wrote a script during COVID and we shot it the following year.
So. It was sort of like the world shut, but everybody was busy. Do you know what I mean? Everyone was sort of...
Proactive. Yeah.
Writing scripts.
Absolutely.
Making silly content for Instagram or for WhatsApp. Or there was, you know, people were doing these Zoom parties, weren't they? And having drinks. And playing games on Zoom. And then, you know, but everyone was connected with content. So it was either music.
Yeah.
It was WhatsApp. It was Instagram. Or it was Netflix. Or it was movies. Do you know what I mean? It's like, have you seen this movie?
My movie, The Reckoning, came out during COVID and it was about the plague.
Wow.
I know.
That was good timing.
That was very good timing. I know, but it was good because a lot of people saw it, I guess, on the streamers, but... It was meant to get a theatrical here and it didn't because of COVID. Yeah. But then it did get a theatrical in the US, so. Right. Oh, COVID.
So what are you writing now? Have you got any scripts you're working on?
Yes, always. Well, I've just finished. So I just come back from Malta filming a crime thriller set in Malta.
Right.
Super, super excited about that one. That's called Compulsion. Mm. And I am in the middle of writing something else now. So what are you
writing?
This is... It's called...
Was it a secret?
No. Well, this is a horror.
Okay.
It's called The Last Bride. Now, there's a famous musical called Seven Brides for Seven Brothers.
Right.
And it's kind of fucked up, really. It's kind of a really weird, eerie concept. And I thought, that's kind of cool. And it's... So we've kind of turned the whole concept musical on its head. And we've made it like The Hills Have Eyes, Wrong Turn kind of vibe.
Right, okay.
Yeah, it's pretty messed up.
Who's going to direct that?
Right now, we've got the script. Literally, I just read it before I came in here. I'm super excited about it. It was kind of my idea, but I hired a great writer for it. We're looking for a woman director. This needs a woman director.
Right, okay.
Because it's, you know, it's very sensitive and the topic matter, and I think it needs a woman's perspective on this.
So if there's any women watching this that are directors, get in touch with Charlotte.
Yes, absolutely. I'm on the lookout.
So, Charlotte, I mean, today's been great. I mean, we've had a really good chat. It's great hearing about your career. And hopefully at some point...
we've got to do a crime movie together.
Well, no, we're definitely doing that. But I think there's going to be... there will be an opportunity, no doubt, when all of your court cases end for you to sort of talk more. So you might have to come back again.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to. I want to.
But I'm looking forward to that just coming out. That's going
to
be fun.
Premiere.
Absolutely. I'll be on the carpet. Thanks so much for coming on.
Of course, thank you.
Thanks for tuning into the Criminal Connection podcast. Charlotte Kirk, what a great guest. Thank you so much for watching. Make sure you like, subscribe, and tell all your mates about the Criminal Connection podcast. And I'll see you next week.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.